John Parr's short film, A Pack of Five, features soldiers taking a moment's rest from the horrors of battle, sharing a smoke and memories of home. John Parr, a Grammy-nominated artist, has written, directed and composed the music for the film. And of course, we know him so well for his hit St. Elmo's Fire, which I absolutely love. And he joins me now on the show, along with one of the cast, Drake Williams, who is a veteran himself. Thank you so much for coming on the show, guys.
It's a pleasure. Great to be here.
John, A Pack of Five is inspired by the poetry of Hed Wynne. Can you tell us how it all came about? What's the story behind it?
Yeah, I'd had the idea of doing a story about war poetry. I'd always loved the English ones that I learned about at school. But I thought I'd been working in Wales and I'd never heard of a Welsh one. And I searched, and the first one I came across was Hed Wynne. And when you read his own story, it's quite incredible. It's a movie in itself. And it just took me over. I was just completely captivated.
And it's set during World War One, but you wanted to focus on that quiet human moment rather than the usual battlefield action.
Yeah, you know, we've seen through the lens of Spielberg downwards, we've seen everybody capture everything, you know, in Hollywood on the battlefield. And I think sometimes what people say to each other maybe can make a difference when the gun doesn't, if you like. You know, I realise the need for force when you meet an immovable force. But words, you know, that's what we pray for, don't we, the words. And it's funny, you know, those words of Hed Wynne are over 100 years old and they still resonate. So few have been translated into English, and the couple that have, they are truly vibration. They vibrate within you.
And what did you do in terms of research to make sure that you captured those moments of connection between the soldiers?
I read all the Hed Wynne story. I watched the Hed Wynne film and documentaries about him, and then looked at the files, the military files about his death and about the I. Stedford files, about the making of the chair and how the pure listeners, when somebody wins the I. Stedford for a remarkable piece of poetry, they're awarded a chair. And the story of the chair is remarkable in itself. But I tried not to get sidetracked. I wanted these five guys not to realise that they had a connection with Hed Wynne. Yeah, they'd heard the poetry, but the little twist in the story is that they've all got a personal connection they didn't realise. And it's how the man shaped them as well as his words, his poetry.
And Drake, with your real-life military experience, you served in Afghanistan. How did you bring authenticity to your role? And was there anything in the script that really resonated with what you'd been through yourself?
So the role was actually quite different from my military experience, because I was playing the role of a French field surgeon. And in real life, I was a sapper. I was with the Royal Wiltshire Royal Engineers Militia. I got attached to 2-1 Engineer Regiment to go off on Herrick 12 in summer of 2010. So, you know, experienced some quite different things, obviously a very different environment from the Somme to Helmand Province. There's definitely certain things that carry on throughout. As John alluded to before, is you've got all of the action that's already been taken by Hollywood, and we can't really compete with that. But one thing I was told while I was in pre-deployment training before going to Afghan is get ready for extended periods of boredom and then extreme violence. It's going to be, you know, Hollywood is so much focused on the action stuff, whereas there's so much of the, you know, connections between the soldiers, the working relationships, and just the preparation and not knowing when the next thing is going to kick off, but making sure that you're ready for the next bit. And it's these down moments between that I think John's really captured, and it's just been an absolute honour to be part of.
Joe, you know, I think I was out there on Herrick 12 as well, and sometimes some of the guys would stop by and just have a chat, and it's obviously not the same, but those down moments where they could just come and offload a bit over a cup of tea, like, you know, I have a vague kind of understanding of it. And do you think that stories like this help us civilians better understand the human side of it, that really human side of what it's actually like to be out there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, personally, I think one of the biggest losses for us societally is the tradition of bards, storytelling and all the rest of it. Because in telling your stories, you're not only preparing younger guys to know what to expect, but you're also processing your own trauma or whatever else, and you're getting things out there, and you're hearing and telling stuff that you didn't realize other people would be able to relate to, and you get to share that and have that with people. You know, I was medically discharged from the army in 2018 for mental reasons, because I should have gotten help straight after Herrick 12, but I didn't. Interestingly enough, it was that period that I was involved in my first project that was also to do with Heddwen's Rhyfel, which was Now yr Arwyr, which was done by Mark Rees. In English, it's Now the Hero, but that was the 2018 100th anniversary of World War One, and that was this huge immersive thing that started off on the beach in Swansea, a performance all the way down the street, and then into a large building where there was a lot of indoor stuff as well. So, really been delving recently and revisiting the Mabinogion and all these things that, well, I could go on for a bit. But what I would say is one of my favorite quotes of George Orwell is, "To destroy a people, all you have to do is, make them completely unfamiliar with their own history." Butchered that quote, but the basic meaning is the same. I'm not going to get conspiratorial and start saying that society is deliberately trying to stop us from learning our history, but modern society is so distracting. Everyone's got all these in their pockets, and it's just, you're looking everywhere and you feel like you're having to sprint at full speed all the time to just keep flow and not fall backwards. And people don't have the time to look behind them and realize who they are, where they're from, and what they're descended from, and the traditions that we represent. Yeah, I think I might have gone on a bit of a tangent there, but thanks for
No,
the question.
thank you for being honest, and I'm sorry you went through that, and I hope you're doing all right. And in that context, is it quite cathartic doing something like this, or does it stir up a lot of stuff that's really tough, or perhaps a bit of both?
Yeah, I'll be completely honest with you. When I first got discharged, I went through the whole process with Help for Heroes and Tedworth House, and I got given all of the therapy and whatever. And I turned up, I tried, but nothing touched the sides, and it was just I just felt like I was wasting my time. If it works for you, everyone should try it, see if it works. But everyone responds differently, and I just wasn't one of those who it worked with. And so I went off and did other things. Ended up getting a side hustle on my job doing professional fire breathing through a random free performance I did for a friend's party immediately after lockdown. And a picture managed to get via Tinder to a girl in the costume department who messaged and said, "Hey, my friend's a TV producer and he's looking for a fire. I actually put you in touch." Thought it was going to be some little S4C local thing. Turned out to be Lucasfilm. Had to start my own business in order to get the contract, get insured, build a team, and all the rest of it. Got the filming done. It was brilliant. And then I had a fire performance team. So I started doing the local circuits with festivals and other bits and bobs. And then I fell in with the Soldiers Arts Academy, which is run by Amanda Faber. Massive thanks to her. She's helped me a lot. So she got me in on various bits and bobs and ended up doing some fire performances for Shakespeare's Globe Theatre in 2023 as part of The Winter's Tale, because Sean Holmes, the director that year, really wanted to spice up the sheep shearing festival scene. So he had a few extras come in from Chelsea Hospital and a few other veterans, and had me doing fire juggling in Shakespeare's Globe. So I think I'm one of only about three performers who has ever been allowed to do fire in Shakespeare's Globe. But like I said, it was a lot of rehearsals and then a lot of performances. There was a lot of time in the green room with absolute career, amazing Shakespearean actors. So we were talking and things, and one thing led to another, and I got some advice and started doing some acting training and found an agent, and things just kind of went from there. And it's yeah, it's been a bit of a crazy ride, but but yeah, I think that the big thing that people miss with acting is essentially when we have myths and legends and traditions of any culture, we have an encyclopedia there of that culture's idea and of archetypes of what a hero is, what a good man is, what a bad man is, what a good woman is, what a villain is, all these different things. Because there's different roles. If it's a decent, if you've got the full pantheon or the full stories of any culture, it'll have examples of what are the good values to live your life by in this culture. Acting is a way in which you can engage directly, because you can watch and you can enjoy watching people perform. But when you read it and then you learn the role and then you perform it and you try and take on not just the words, but the emotionality and the history of this person, and you try and become it, then you're actually learning and linking with your culture and the heritage that it comes from. Screens are wonderful things. I'm not going to diss them. I've experienced so many wonderful stories through the medium of TV screens, but you're never going to have the best seat in the house unless you get on the stage yourself.
Well, that is an incredible story. And I would just say at this point, if anyone feels like they could use some help, there is plenty available. And you can find the one that suits you, bfbs.com/audience support. And that's something that springs to mind there is the pen is mightier than the sword. John, do you still think that's a really important message?
I do, and it's very interesting what Dreg said, because we made this film. I mean, I'm the outsider. Everybody was Welsh. And so Hedwin is almost a biblical figure to a lot of Welsh people. So from the crew to the cast, everybody kind of was on their honour, if you like, to deliver. And I think that, I mean, it's only a very short film. And the other thing, again, is I'm not military. My father was military, but I would say probably for half my life, I've worked with initially disability. The man in motion, Set Almost Fire, he's actually, I don't know if you know, he's actually the story of a man, disabled man going around the world in a wheelchair. Everybody thinks it's about the movie. And I made it sound like it was, but it's not. It's about a guy called Rick Anson who was disabled very young, lost the use of his legs, and wheeled around the world to raise awareness. And we raised to date $370 million for the
Wow.
cause. And it, so it brings light to it. And I've continued with that. And again, probably worked for about 10 years in America with the American military. And it's exactly that. The invisible injury really took hold of me more than the one that people see and easily sympathize with. Whereas the invisible injury is one that people sometimes don't tolerate too well. And of course, we know that soldiers, when they come back into civilian life, they've had an extraordinary experience and they have to live an ordinary life again and try to do that. So I went to America to do my bit because it was 39 soldiers a week killing themselves when I went. And it was just horrendous. And so coming back, my previous film was done with two disabled elite soldiers, a film called Unconquered, which went some way to help send the message. And indeed, I think made Drake come on board for this film because when you're doing a subject like this with a real soldier and a person that's sacrificed everything, they look at you sideways with their arms because they're soldiers. And I showed him the film to hopefully gain a lot of ground quickly because I needed him on board, and he did wonderfully, as did everyone. He was the only true soldier on board. But when you see it, I think there's something else going on. Wales is a very magical culture, but it's so such a secret, and it's a wonderful story that I think could be global. So I always am attracted to secrets, you know, those until they become global, and then the spark goes off it for me. But I do like those untold stories outside of the country, you know.
And you've got a special screening at the Victory Services Club later this month. That's going to be particularly meaningful, isn't it?
Especially there, it's an entirely a message of peace. And of course, you're showing it, you know, in a military, semi-military environment. But of course, we know that sometimes push comes to shove. And that is the glory of the military, you know, that people are willing to absolutely put, and their family goes to war with them every day, don't they? That's the other thing. And worse for the family, I think, in many ways, because their imagination is working overdrive. So, yeah, I've been thinking what I'll say when I introduce the film there, because it is an unusual environment to put it in. But I think the message is so bright that everybody will get the integrity in which we're telling the story.
And what do you hope, Drake, that people will take away from it once they've seen it?
Well, it reminds me of two quotes. First of them is, I can't remember the name of the Roman who said it originally in Latin, but it's Civis Pacem, para bellum, which is, if to prepare for peace, you must prepare for war. Then there's the commonly misattributed one, so I'm not going to try and say who said it first. All that evil needs to succeed is that good men do nothing. Now, I'd actually counter that by saying, if you do nothing, you are not a good man, you're just useless. But you know, you've got to stand up and do something. And at the end of the day, it's those who are willing to fight the hardest because they're fighting for something soft and precious that they want to maintain. It's like if a mummy cat was to claw a bear's eyes out because it was attacking her kittens, you could have people going, oh, that's bear hating. Ooh, terrible. I'm like, no, I love a kitten. You know, and it's if you're not willing to love something enough to defend it, and obviously we don't just jump up and, you know, we'll try and talk things and work our way around first of all. But you know, if push comes to shove, if you're not willing to pick up that spear or whatever is to your side to preserve the thing that you say you care about, you don't really care about it.
Yeah, if you let them come for everyone else, etc. And you've already won awards for this, John. Have a little brag.
Yeah, we've qualified for the BAFTAs, BAFTA Cymru. We won the best UK short last week in Liverpool, and in 2 days we're in Hollywood. It's being screened at the Chinese Theatre in
Amazing.
Hollywood. So, it's a long shot whether we win that because about 5,000 entries, but we're in it. But I think it's very strange because obviously we made the film when, yes, Ukraine was going on, but it was early days. Nobody could foresee what's happened to the world, in these 18 months since. And I think maybe when they're shown in these film festivals, it almost feels like you could say we've done it deliberately, but we hadn't. It was just timely. There's so much talking being done, isn't there? But I'm not convinced it's the right kind of talking. It's just, and I don't know. I mean, looking for peace in the world has never been achieved, has it? Ever. But you, nonetheless, you don't stop trying. But yeah, so that's, I think that's why the film is probably, as well as it being, I think, although it's mine, it's ours. I think it's very beautiful and very poignant. And it's not about me, it's about somebody else. And it's about 20 people getting together and making this beautiful thing that nobody really knew about outside of Wales, you know.
And when and where will people be able to watch A Pack of Five?
Well, it's, as we say, it's the VSC.
Wednesday, yeah, 22nd.
When, yeah, when, yeah. We're talking with the BBC, we're talking with a few, it's always very difficult with a short film because people don't know where to put it. Where it seems obvious to me that with platforms and iPlayers and things like that, it's perfect because people can tune in for half an hour, 20 minutes and get a fix. Because for sure, if you watch, certainly if you watch this film, you'll come out of it. You'll have a tear in your eye, but you will be greatly uplifted and moved and certainly cause you to keep thinking about it. And that's really what we want, isn't it? And you don't need 2 hours. If you do it properly, you can do it in 10 minutes. It's what people say and how and what motivates what they say.
And I think in a way that's more powerful than the 3 hour long, oh, I'm going to need a break halfway through type of thing, especially these days with our shorter attention
It's
spans.
absolutely, totally,
Yeah.
totally. Like you say, we live in that kind of blink and you've missed it, especially for the kids. This particularly, we think it could be a school play, for 10, 12-year-olds, because and though they smoke in it, they could fake smoke. But I think it could be very good. And I think you could have, obviously, you break the rules because obviously there were no ladies on the, there were plenty of ladies behind the battlefield and making things happen. But I think you could have girls play the part. There'd be nothing wrong with that because it's what's being said, And it's like when Drake, we keep saying men, 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 but it's not, is it? It's not. There's great many ladies made the sacrifice and are still making the sacrifice, and difficult and more difficult. I still think the military is a very hard place for particularly young women. I think it's difficult because there's all still old pressures and viewpoints. You really have to be committed, don't you? I think you really have to be committed to go, both as a boy and a girl, but I think more so as a girl. Very, very tough.
Well, I cannot wait to watch it. No doubt it's going to be an incredibly poignant evening as well at the Victory Services Club. Thank you both so much for coming on the show. And John, if I could you just indulge me and introduce an Elmo's Fire for me?
Yeah, this is John Parr. I wrote St. Elmo's Fire with David Foster. Man in Motion, enjoy.